You are listening to Eastside Radio Podcast.
Let me tell you about Wentworth. Let me tell you about Wentworth. Yeah, 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 Wentworth. It's like the greatest place on earth. People who live in Wentworth are very happy because Wentworth is very nice. Oh, yeah. La, 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 la. Good old Wentworth. It's in New South Wales, right where the Darling and the Murray River collide. Oh, yeah. Those two rivers, they say every day, I'll meet up with you at Wentworth. And that's what happens. Yes, it is. Uh-huh. I like to go cruising Darling Street. It's such a wonderful street to drive on in Wentworth.
Well, talking about Wentworth, perhaps not exactly the same Wentworth, but Allegra Spender is the member of the Federal Parliament for the seat of Wentworth, which encompasses the precinct from which we broadcast here right now, here at Bondi Beach. Elected as an independent in 2022, Allegra is part of a wave of community-backed representatives advocating for integrity in politics, decisive climate action, and gender equality, amongst a few other bits and pieces that we'll get to shortly. She's had an extensive and successful background in business and renewable energy, and she brings a wealth of experience and a pragmatic approach to addressing pressing national and local issues. And I'm extremely pleased and honoured to welcome Allegra Spender into the Eastside Radio studio here at Bondi. Allegra Spender, good afternoon. Welcome to Monday Drive.
Thank you so much for having me, Alan.
It's always a pleasure. You grew up in the local area, Allegra.
Yeah.
Do you have any particular memories of Bondi or the beach or the area?
Well, many, many. I've lived basically in Wentworth my whole life. I lived a bit overseas and otherwise I've always been in Wentworth. I was just thinking, one of the things I remember most distinctly is always coming down to Bondi twice on Christmas Day. So it would come down in the morning straight after presents before lunch and then would always come back in the afternoon after, you know, long lunch to kind of freshen up again. And I sort of feel, you know, how many people in the world can say they sort of went to two swims, you know, on Bondi every Christmas? But it was such an important part for me of Christmas and of just the luxury of living in such a beautiful and gorgeous area.
Well, I suppose the best part of that story, of course, is that you got the present.
To be honest, the swims are amazing. I've got to say that as you grow up, you change and, you know, you're much more coming to the beach with my friends and then, you know, doing the Bondi Bronte walks, all those kind of parts of just being in this area.
You have an economics degree. You have a Master of Science in Psychology from the University of London. You've completed business courses at both Harvard and Dartmouth College. You're a McKinsey alumnus, the managing director of an international and successful business empire. Why on earth politics? After all, you did initially decline the offer to run, didn't you?
I did. It was a very hard decision to run. I knew it would be very public. You know, I have young kids. I had a job I loved. I used to have an Italian passport. No longer. Can't keep those things when
right,
you're if you run.
Gotta go.
Yeah, gotta go. But for me, I have grown up in this area my whole life. I'm very proud of the community, and I think of the values of this community. And I really felt very deeply, and still do, that the major parties were not representing our community. Right. And so I was approached, and, you know, first time I said, oh, you know, you're flattering me, but, you know, I'd love to, but there's no way. And then eventually I just said, look, you know, I will stand up because I think it's really important, because change doesn't happen unless you force change. And, you know, I just decided, look, it's a risk, you know, it may blow up in my face, but it's a risk worth taking because there are some really important issues. You know, climate action is really important. Mm. Better frankly, standing up for the values of your community and, you know, the both the business community and but also the broader community is really important. And actually, I'll tell a story about Bondi because there's a young man, you know, would have been probably early 30s, who was pushing his I think son on one of those tricycles along the promenade, and I met him during the 2021 campaign, and I said, "Oh, look, what's important to you?" And he said, "I live in a beautiful place. I want us to look after nature, you know, for the next generation." He said, "You know, I want people to treat each other kindly. I want us to treat each other with decency in our community." And he said, "I'm a small business owner, and that's really important to me too." And I just thought that's such a good, you know, capturing. It's such a clever way of capturing the values of our community and saying we want to find balance in all those three things, and you know, we want those values to be represented in Parliament.
And did you grab him by the collar and say, "You're joining my team"?
No, I was like, "Thank you very much," but it stuck with me. It's funny how you meet people and they really, you know, really tell you what you need to hear. And that's actually being part of a community independent, is actually listening to people constantly, saying, "Well, what's on your mind? What's important? And then how can I make a difference to the issues that matter to you?"
Okay. Your mum, Carla Zampati, left school when she was 14. What lessons did you take from her early mark from school?
So mum was an Italian immigrant. She came out from Italy in 1950 when she was 11. She didn't speak English. Her family, you know, didn't have any money or connections. And as you say, she left school at a really early age. And then she started her business. And she had a, you know, really successful business that, you know, we all worked in, frankly, I worked in that business since I was 11 every school holiday. Mm. But I think for me, I have two lessons from mum's life. One is that Australia, the best of Australia, is one where it doesn't matter where you come from, it doesn't matter who your parents are, you know, you have opportunity here. And if you really, you know, if you seize those opportunities, you know, whether you're the CEO or whether you're, you know, working, you know, in a retail store or wherever, if you work hard and you have take opportunities, you can create a good life for you and your family. And that's one lesson for me, is that I'm really proud my mum got those opportunities. I think it's really important that every generation has that opportunity, regardless of where you know, where we are. And I think the other side is, you know, really about hard work. I mean, I think that's what she wanted us to learn as kids, particularly growing up in the eastern suburbs, which has a bad reputation some days. But, you know, she wanted us to know, you know, that you don't get ahead except by working really hard. And I think, you know, my sister, my brother and I think we've really tried to take that message really to heart.
Okay, so that if your mother's influence on you was more as a woman of independence and leadership in business and hard work, which it obviously was,
yeah,
why did your father's influence as a politician have more sway on the direction you ultimately took in your career?
Well, when I worked for 10 years in mum's business, and, you know, I've only done 3 years so far in this side. So,
so you'll make a decision in 7 years' time.
Yeah, I might make a decision in 7 years' time. But the truth is, you know, of course, your whole family influences you. And I remember going door knocking with dad as a young kid, and I was so embarrassed. I remember he would walk up the path to the house, and I would be like hiding at the street, just going, "Oh my God, this is so embarrassing." And here I've just come from door knocking around here, so, you know.
Well, talking about your dad, you grew up in the shadow of Andrew Peacock and John Howard, thanks to your dad, who was the shadow minister under them, let alone your grandfather, who was also in politics. Has politics changed since those times to the extent that Teal candidates can have such influence, as opposed to left versus right career politicians? In other words, evidence-based versus party political positions.
Look, I think it's changed a lot, and I think you see that in how people are voting. So back in, I think, the 80s and 90s, about 90-95% of the country voted for, you know, the Coalition or the Labor Party.
Yep.
Now, in, you know, the latest polls, it looks like at least a third of the country is going to say, "Nup, doesn't work for me." And I think what's really happened is people are really frustrated that the major parties don't stand for them anymore. They feel, you know, I hear this time and time again, you know, they stand for, firstly, for themselves. You know, the parliamentarians, you know, are, represent really the party as opposed to the people.
Right.
And I think there's also a real frustration that some of the big issues facing our country, you know, whether it be climate change, whether it be housing, which has, you know, been a disaster in the making for 20 years,
yeah.
You know, whether it be the fact that we've got low productivity and businesses are struggling and, you know, our healthcare system struggling, all those issues, people are going, well, we've had these issues, they've been building, and why haven't the majors dealt with it? And I think there's that real frustration in that, and that's why I think people are turning to independents.
Okay. Because I was going to say that your father famously crossed the floor in opposition to defence policy at the time. Do you think that helped steer you towards independence as opposed to party aligned?
I think Dad had a really open mind. That was one of his great qualities. You could always convince him, you know, if you had an argument, if you had an evidence, it had the evidence behind you, you could change Dad's mind. Yeah. And I think that's actually something I think is a really important part. So I think he was intellectually curious and he brought that openness. And I think that's probably the biggest lesson I've taken. And that's how I approach every policy, basically. Yeah. You know, I'm lucky. I basically get to say, okay, what's the evidence? What did the stakeholders think? What does the community think? I get to make up my own mind based on what is important to this community. And I think that's really what people are looking for.
All right. Somebody once described you as shy. Actually, it was you.
Yeah.
How far does shyness take you in politics?
Look, I'm much less shy than I used to be, I have to say. When I was younger, I remember going to different, like, you know, a event or something. If I didn't know people very well, I would literally, you know, come to the event, and if I couldn't see anyone I knew around the room, I would scuttle off to the bathroom for 10 minutes and said, I'm embarrassed to say this, but I was really shy. But, you know, politics really beats it out of you. And I think the other thing that I did when I was at uni, you know, I was keen to help raise money for different charities. And so I did quite a lot of tin shaking on streets. And that's actually great preparation for politics.
It's the precursor to door knocking, isn't it?
It is, exactly right. So it really helped me just go, hi, would you like to, you know, I got sort of very comfortable with people trying to ignore me. Anyway.
Okay. Look, a lot is made of the relationships in politics.
Mm.
Are the relationships between politicians as toxic as the media make them out to be? For example, do you think Messrs Albanese and Dutton exchange Christmas cards?
I don't know if they exchange Christmas cards, but I wouldn't be surprised if they do. The truth is, I think the personal relationships are much better than they come across. And I think this is actually one of the problems in politics, and this is something I think independents are really making a difference in. The behaviour in question time, the sort of shouting, the name-calling, the sort of finger-pointing, does nobody likes in Australia. I have to say, I've never met a single member of the community who says, yeah, I love the way that our politicians behave.
Mm.
And there's, I think, on privately, there's much better behaviour and much more civility. And I think we just need to bring that civility out into the public sphere, because I think, you know, when I'm sitting in question time and I'm looking up in the galleries and I see kids and, you know, literally almost every question time you'll have 100, 200 kids in the galleries, often kids from this area. And I'm just appalled that they're looking down at the leaders of the country going, oh, is this how we're meant to behave?
That's right.
You know, it's terrible.
Let me put the question to you another way. Do you and Dave Sharma ever have a drink together?
No, but I have sent him Christmas cards. And to be honest,
Dave Sharma a Christmas card?
Yeah, I have, absolutely. But I have also I live with a couple of the other independents, and we've had people over for dinner, and we've had a bit of rainbow dinners in the sense of people from different parts of the parliament. So, you know, Green and Nat, a Liberal, a Labor over for dinner. You know, just because I think what we're trying to do actually is, you know, build, you know, it's a tough job. It's not an easy job. And I think that if people have respect and relationships, you can also achieve more, I think, in the outcomes that you're trying to pursue in the parliament.
Okay, let's have a quick break before we have a chat about some policy issues.
Look, Located in the heart of Marrickville, Lazy Bones Lounge and Restaurant and Bar, with its eclectic decor, is a restaurant and a bar with a unique, relaxed atmosphere where people can meet, hang out, chat, and listen to live music. This February, extraordinary musicians are coming to Lazy Bones, such as the Birth of Cool Orchestra, playing jazz legend Miles Davis's album, Birth of the Cool, on the 2nd. La Tertulia will be playing tribute to Latin pop rock from the 80s to the 2000s. They're playing on the 14th. And the Joe Cocker Story playing on the 16th, taking you on a journey through the legend's many hits. Plus, there's the Rayman 3, the Subterraneans, and the Greasy Chicken Orchestra, featuring Justine Clark, and many more this February. To find out more, or book tickets, online head to lazyboneslounge.com.au. Lazy Bones Lounge is a proud Eastside sponsor.
The time on Eastside Radio is 26 minutes past four. You're listening to Monday Drive. I'm Alan Field, and my special guest today is Allegra Spender, the federal member for Wentworth. Allegra, Wentworth is a densely populated area. It's only around about 31 square kilometres, and it's got a population of around about 165,000 residents. And yet you support even higher density development to tackle housing affordability and availability. Do you see any conflict there?
Look, I think there are parts of Wentworth that are the best, the most densely populated parts of the country at all, and that's particularly around sort of King's Cross, Potts Point is the most densely populated part of the country, and I think that works really well. When I say densely population, however, I'm talking about the country as a whole, and you know, I think Wentworth has a role to absorb some, but as you say, we already are a very, very dense part of the country. I do think, you know, we will, you know, end up being somewhat more dense, certainly to cover our own population growth. But we also need to show the way and show that you can live in a dense part of the country in a way that actually creates great community. And there is great community. You know, again, Bondi, Waverley, it's already a very densely populated part of the country. And people love living here. So I think we need to show that there are other parts of the country that could follow our example and also have a wonderful quality of life.
Right, right. You started advocating for climate change when you joined the Parliament in 2022. Are you satisfied with the progress you've seen regarding it since that time?
Look, we've made, you know, I always use the analogy that it's like we're a big sort of ship and we've turned the ship around, so at least we're pointing in the right direction, mm-hmm. But we're not yet going full steam ahead. You know, when I joined the Parliament, the target for reduction in emissions for 2030 was 26 to 28%. Now it's 43%. And just recently, the Climate Change Authority said that we are now on track to deliver that result, which I think is a really positive piece. But we know we need to go further, and that is both, I think, for our climate, but it's also because our energy system is transitioning,
right.
Because 90% of our coal-fired power stations are going to close in the next 10 years because they're just too old. Yeah. I mean, they've been going a long time. Yeah. They're dirty, but they're actually just too old, and they're starting to creak, and they're actually starting to make energy unreliable. So we need to make that transition regardless on the basis of we need to modernise the grid and take it to the next phase. So I think it's both those things that are important. We have made progress. You know, again, one of the things I'm most proud of, really pushing the government on and successfully getting the government to move is, for instance, to have fuel efficiency standards in new vehicles, so that we end up not just importing the dirty cars from around the world, but like the rest of the OECD, if we have these standards in, it means that we end up having, you know, car manufacturers are obliged to sell us of some of the cleaner cars, including EVs.
There are two obvious follow-up questions. One is, what is the place for nuclear?
Well, I mean,
I think you painted a picture of 10-year horizon.
Yeah.
Nuclear?
Well, nuclear doesn't fit in the 10-year horizon, let's be honest. Right. No, it doesn't. And, you know, my view on nuclear has always been, you know, we should look at all technologies, you know, in terms of our grid and you know, how to get energy that is clean. Like, I'm sort of technology agnostic. But we need to also understand, firstly, what is the time frame we need to work in? What are the costs that are going to be, we are going to be facing? And, you know, what's the likelihood of it delivering on time? And, you know, when we look at the time frame, you know, as I said, the grid needs to transition in the next 10 years.
Yep.
Nuclear is not an option for that. So we still need to press on with the transition, and particularly that transition to renewable energy, plus batteries, plus also, you know, peak with gas as a intermittent fuel when, you know, when the sun doesn't shine and the wind doesn't blow. But then also, you know, that's from what we need to in the next 10 years. And the other piece is, you know, the costings just don't add up at the moment.
Right.
You know, they add up in other countries, but a solar panel in this country creates 2 to 3 times more energy than a solar panel in Germany or Japan.
We do have rather a lot of sunshine here, don't we?
We do. Mm. I was just talking to Martin Green, who's the really the father of solar, lives in Bronte, you know, and a world leader in the efficiency of panels. And he said, look, we live in the Sun Belt. Mm. You know, he's led the University of New South Wales, that unit there, which now has held the world record for the most efficient panels for about 30 years. It's remarkable, the innovation that's coming out of University of New South Wales. So we don't even just have the best, you know, some of the best sunshine in the world. We also have some of the best technology and brains in the world on these issues.
Do you think we should be a little bit embarrassed on the world stage in that case?
We should be proud of the fact of how much solar energy we have on our roofs, but I think we should be embarrassed that we, and really frustrated, and you know, that is part of my frustration with the coalition. You know, we didn't have to have these climate wars. If we had started this transition, if we had held our sort of nerve, you know, for the last sort of 10, 15 years, we'd be so far ahead. It would be cheaper. It would be easier. But we haven't been. And so now we are playing catch up. And that is very frustrating because Australia should be a leader in this area. And we haven't been. And we're in playing catch up right now.
The second thing that occurred to me while you were talking a little earlier, if you were to bump into Donald Trump in the street, what would you say to him regarding his attitude to climate change? Or indeed, what would you say to him about his executive order reintroducing plastic straws because paper ones are, quote, no good, unquote?
All the things I would say to Donald Trump. It's a long list. I think the great challenge with Donald Trump is, you know, he purports to sort of be looking after the little guy, the people who are left behind. But the truth is that his actions make those communities more vulnerable, because who are the people most affected, you know, by sort of extreme weather events? Who are people, you know, most affected by some of what happens? It is actually the people without a lot of savings, without a lot of options. And I think that is really frustrating. And if you are going to be a steward, you know, I see myself as a steward, right, of the sort of you know, the next generation, and it is so frustrating to see what he's doing, and it is so destructive. But we have to just make sure that we learn the lessons of that election. Some of which are when people feel left behind, they will be angry. And we need to make sure that in this country we don't leave people behind, that people still feel they've got options ahead of them. Because I think if we don't deal with those issues, if we don't make things work for each other, you know, we're going to have real problems. And again, that's why I've been a big advocate of support for household batteries, for support for solar on roofs and stuff like that, because people are hurting with their energy bills, but if they can get solar energy on their roofs, if they can actually get some support to make the transition, they actually have much more control over their cost of living, and that's really important to people right now.
Okay. Donald Trump also has clearly got some issues embracing the LGBTI community. What would you say to him about that issue in that same street encounter?
We have to stop using people in our community as political footballs. And I think this targeting of different communities is absolutely foul, and it is there to create division in the US, and we cannot give in to that in our country. I think we need to, you know, we in this country I think one of the best things about Australia is, you know, most people don't care what religion you are, what background you are, you know, what sexuality, what gender, you know, most people just don't care. Mm. They want to see if, you know, you're someone who is, they treat you, they meet you where you are, and if you're a good person, you know, they give you the benefit of the doubt. And those are the values of our country, and I think we have to guard against those people who are trying to weaponize, you know, sort of issues to try and really drive division. And you see that, you saw it in our parliament just last week, where Pauline Hanson, you know, tried to bring in a sort of parliamentary inquiry into trans kids. Mm. Now, there is there's a proper inquiry going on, led by, you know, health professionals, led by the community around issues in terms of relating to trans children. But, you know, the worst place to have debates around, you know, the best treatment for trans children is in a Senate inquiry where everybody's grandstanding, where people, you know, are doing this. But you still had, I think, 18 of the coalition senators who voted for that motion, which I found extremely disappointing, because there's no part of that motion that was going to get a constructive and positive outcome for the community. It was a motion that was there to create division, to create real concern across the community, and cannot be stood for.
Extraordinary. Okay. I think it was last week, wasn't it, that the government passed the electoral funding laws?
Mm.
That place a comparable financial cap on all candidates' campaign expenditures, but would permit significantly greater allowances for parties. That's how I understand it. How does that concept fit in with your definition of transparency and equity?
Look, you know, I'm like, I think, most of the community. I want to see the big money get out of politics, and I want to see a level playing field. I think our political world does better when there's real competition. And the problem, as you identified with the rules that were pushed through last week, you know, really without any parliamentary oversight.
I want to talk about the process too.
Well, the problem with them is that they have spending limits, you know, for all candidates, and that's appropriate. I'm happy with spending limits. I'm happy with donation limits. But if you are, you know, if I'm running as an independent, I can spend up to $800,000 on my seat, in that spending. If, you know, you're the Labor Party or the Coalition, you can spend $800,000 with any materials that say the name of the candidate,
yep.
And you can spend an unlimited amount on anything that just says Liberal or Labor.
Right.
And given the Labor Party, as far as I know, hasn't even got a candidate yet in this electorate, you know, that's how much I think, most of the major parties, they run on the brand. They don't run on the individual candidates so much. And so I think it's really seen there to really make it harder for independents.
Yep.
Ditto, you know, a company can give, or an individual can give up to $50,000 to me. You know, that's a big amount of money.
Mm.
But they can give up to $450,000 to the Labor Party. So, you know, again, when I look at that, I go, you know what? That's not even Stephen, and that's why, you know, you see, you know, the major party saying this is great for democracy, and you see all the transparency and, people like the Centre for Public Integrity and the Democracy Network saying this is really bad for democracy, and you should know who to trust.
Well, I've got a solution for you. Why don't you and all the other independents around the country join together, call yourself a party, and participate in the greater funding? You don't have to rub each other's backs.
Mm. Look, I mean, I think that's what a bunch of people are saying. Well, that's what's going to happen. But I think the first thing we should try and do is try and fix the legislation, because
the legislation was passed, wasn't it?
It has been passed. Parliament will return at some point. And I think, you know, for me, the big part is that there was no process. There was no due process to examine what is, you know, the most profound electoral reform for 40 years. And that's what I would seek in the next term if I'm re-elected, is that we go back into basics. We examine it. We make sure there's a public hearings about it. And then, you know, we listen to the experts and then decide what sort of legislation should be, you know, passed and whether it should be changed.
Okay, let's just have another quick break for a moment. I think all this stuff is heavy gear.
Sorry, everyone.
Let's pause for a moment.
For 30 years, Ensemble Offspring has been at the forefront of groundbreaking new music in Australia and beyond. Now, we're inviting you to be part of our 2025 birthday season with a subscription that gives you more than just incredible concerts. Choose from three package options, including the Avant Garden subscription of relaxed social salon concerts or our hand-picked triple feature 2025 highlights presented in superb Sydney venues. Or pick the full E030 celebration, giving you access to all seven season concerts. As a subscriber, you'll also enjoy VIP invitations to behind-the-scenes events, plus exclusive partner perks like discounts on Rally Wines and TFE hotel bookings. Season subscriptions start at only $170. Sales end on Friday, the 28th of February. Be part of something extraordinary. Subscribe today at EnsembleOscreen.com. Eastside sponsor.
And it's 20 minutes, 20 and a half minutes to five. I'll get that one right. And my guest is Allegra Spender, a federal member for Wentworth, here with me in the studios. Allegra, you've been particularly visible of late with your commentary and your attempt to widen the hate law legislation, especially in the wake of the hideous anti-Semitism acts in recent times. What's the single most significant action the community leaders and legislators can take, do you think, to foster social cohesion and to effectively combat anti-Semitism and Islamophobia and any other sort of similar behaviour in Australia?
Look, what people have been dealing with, and particularly in our community, recent times has been disgusting and in deeply, deeply worrying. And I think to all of us, I mean, I door knock a lot and I speak to a lot of people, you know, Jewish, non-Jewish, who have really been shaken by what's been going on. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, I can't say there's just one thing, because I think there are different things that we need to do and different roles. You know, from the police point of view, I think we need to catch the people who are doing this and show that the people, you know, if you behave like this, if you try and intimidate and threaten and, you know, use car bombs and those sorts of things, you know, you will be caught and you will go to jail. And I think that is really critical for deterrence.
And are you satisfied that the New South Wales government has resources to do that?
Look, I think they've really stepped up and I think that's appropriate. And you're seeing more there. I mean, I think we probably should have stepped up earlier. Yeah. But then come to the second point is the legislators, people like me. I think we do need to, we have made some changes to our laws, which I think are appropriate, but I think we should go one step further. And that's particularly, so the laws that have changed are things like around doxing. There are stronger laws now in terms of inciting violence, but there are still not strong laws around hate speech. People who are speaking in a way that is trying to promote or provoke hatred between our country, between members, groups in our country. And I'll give you two examples. You had some hate preachers who were calling for the final solution of the Jews with reference to what Hitler was seeking in the Second World War. Now, that is not currently covered under the current laws that are currently in, that have just been passed. Mm. But also there was an anti-trans demonstration in Melbourne recently where they held up signs saying destroy pedo freaks. Now, again, that wouldn't be covered as I understand under the current legislation, but it should be, because in both those instances people are trying to make more hate in our country, and we're one of the most diverse countries in the world and we live in harmony, you know, by and large, so well. But if people are trying to promote and provoke hate, I think we need to have guardrails around that to stop them doing that.
And that's a difficult thing to do when you have to balance it against in the context of freedom, this freedom of speech argument.
Sure. Look, it is. And but I think there have always been, you know, guardrails around free speech. You can't defame people. Mm-hmm. You know, that's, so it is, you know, I think it has to be a pretty high bar, I'll be honest. But we actually have this legislation in WA. So there's this similar legislation in WA. It's been in there for the last 20 years. And it's been actually used very judiciously, not very often, but it is there as a safeguard to stop people who are really trying to promote hate. But the final point, you did ask me what else we can do. The final thing, and I think, you know, we do need to as well as the law and the policing, we actually just need to come back to the fundamentals of our Australian community, which is building relationships across different communities, across different bridges, because, you know, we all come with different religions and sexualities and backgrounds and things like that. But what makes Australia special is that, you know, we're interested in the exchange and that we are open to people from different backgrounds. And I think we need to invest in, really double down on those investments, both in our education systems, but also just in our daily lives. And some of the most, I think, heartwarming stuff I've heard and seen and actually been part of is when, you know, bringing people together, like I invited, you know, all the local faith leaders together and said, you know, come together, people going through hard times in different ways, just learn from each other. Different faiths doesn't mean, you know, there aren't common problems amongst so many of our community.
And I do like the way you sent Dave Sharma a Christmas card. look, the requirements of the Wentworth electorate are likely not the same as other Australian electorates. How do you balance representing Wentworth's interests whilst pushing for a broader or different national reform?
Look, I think part of the job of being a local MP is to understand what communities particularly you represent and making sure they have a voice. And if I look at Wentworth, some of the distinctive parts of Wentworth, we're one of the biggest renting populations in the country. So we have about 45% renters, about 60% people in apartments. So that's why I've been very focused on, you know, things like how do we deliver more build to rent? How do we deliver longer lease terms for people? I think that's super important. Another two sort of characteristics of our community are we have the biggest Jewish community in the country. So the focus on anti-Semitism, it's been a really big part of my job. But also we have one of the biggest LGBTQI communities in the country too. And so, you know, that means in both those situations, you get different insight, I think, from representing those communities. And I think it is my job to make sure that I know what are the issues most important to those communities. And I bring those to the parliament and say, look, because some people won't have that insight. They won't have those communities at all or in a big way in their patch. And so they won't necessarily understand what's important. So, you know, the other one is the surf clubs. I mean, we have, I think, I've got five surf clubs. Some people don't have any at all, poor things.
That's right.
So, you know, but you just have to understand, you've got that piece, which is both, you have to represent the country. And I think Wentworth wants what is best for the country. Absolutely. It's not, we're not parochial. We don't want to say, you know, we don't care about you guys in the bush. It's not like that at all. But I think we need to make sure, you know, I feel I'm responsible also for making sure I'm clear on what are most important to our communities and where we're different, making sure those communities have a voice.
We discussed earlier your business background and that comes out in your favouriting entrepreneurialism.
Yeah.
And we know that. Do you have any thoughts, therefore, on the reduction of Oxford Street from four lanes to two in favour of creating more cycleways, which in itself is a good thing, and yet the impact that that might have on the businesses lining that street?
Yeah. Look, you know, I think we do need a dedicated cycleway from, you know, the east into the city. I think that's really important, you know, for our community. You know, but I am really concerned about the current plans that the, you know, the New South Wales or the state and local government have put forward there. You know, I've spoken to the business community, but also the local community, and I'm really concerned that it's not practical. You know, things like the right-hand turns make it really difficult. Yep. People are concerned about that. They're concerned about lots of different aspects. And I think the business community on Oxford Street is really worried too. So, you know, I've said to, you know, New South Wales Transport, you know, did you consider Moore Park? You know, what are the other options there? Because it does need to work for the community as well as, you know, as a commuter lane.
You and your mum have climbed the ladder of the corporate success by yourselves. What steps does Australia need to take to better support women to achieve what you and your mum have achieved? And is it a government responsibility to do so?
Look, I think it's up to all of us. And I think I was really lucky to have a mum who made me feel less guilty about working because she worked when I was a kid and that was how I was brought up. So I feel less guilty about working when I'm raising my kids. And I think that's actually quite a funny gift in its own way. Look, I think that, you know, it's up to all of us. Any social change is up to all of us. But I think that, I think the role of, of government and community is one of the things I'm most passionate about, is how do we share the caring better? Because what you see in most people's sort of career trajectory is men and women often have pretty similar career trajectories after school and uni and things like that. But when it comes to having children, that's when things really change. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things I'm most proud of supporting in this parliament was increasing paid parental leave, but also the paid parental leave that needs to be taken by the second parent, which is typically the dad. Because I think if we get to a situation where there's more sharing of the caring in places like Sweden and other places, then I think that is actually going to be the time that we unlock women's economic empowerment. But it's also good for men's mental health, and it's also good for family relations, actually for the kids. So I think it's a win-win-win piece to share the care.
Right, we're approaching the end of our time together. I've just got a couple of quick ones for you. Transparency in government has been a key focus of yours forever. Mm-hmm. What do you believe are the most urgently needed reforms in that space? For example, do you think all politicians should relinquish their Qantas Club membership as you have?
Look, I mean, I'm glad I did, though. I'm very glad I did. I think it was the right decision. I mean, but what I think are most important, I'd say whistleblower protection authority, because I think actually whistleblowers are the people who create great transparency. You know, we need more transparency in the National Anti-Corruption Commission. You know, that is a piece of a really important institution that the independents really drove to bring in, but the government rejected a bunch of increased transparency measures there. And I think, you know, the NAC is poorer for it. So I think that we really need to step that up. And I think from a transparency piece, we've got to stop the lies in political advertising. Because if someone's lying, you know, they shouldn't be allowed to in politics, in the same way you can't lie on an advertisement saying, you know, this is going to make you look, you know, people do say you look 15 years younger, but no, this is going to make you do this when it's absolutely not. So I think we need to have greater constraints around that.
You said all that without using the word ICAC.
Yes, well, it's the NAC
in ICAC. Yeah. Okay, two more very quick ones for you.
Yeah.
If you had the executive authority the executive order authority for Australia that Mr. Trump had for the USA. What order would you enact if you only had one?
Oh, my gosh. I might have to take that one on notice. That is a big one. There are lots of... I don't know. I think...
I'll give you two.
Okay. No, I'll give you two. I probably would say an executive order, and it's not a perfect order, is around housing, to be honest. Okay. It's like, how do we increase our housing so that our young people can afford to buy and rent like previous generations would? Because we really need to do that. It's, I think, probably the biggest issue that we've got domestically as a country. And then I think in terms of another one, I would say a really important one is the environment. You know, this parliament hasn't made enough progress. I think Labor hasn't been, I'll be honest, brave enough in relation to the environment. We need to protect our environment while at the same time, you know, making it easy for people, you know, to build wind turbines and solar and stuff like that. But we really need to step up our protections.
Okay, then. Well, those two will have to do for the time being. Now, I simply don't know how you find the time to do what you do. You must go home at night. There must be some way you relax. Where does music fit into your life? What sort of music do you like?
To be honest, I like a wide range. I've got young kids, 8, 10 and 12, and so half of my music is dominated by my children and whatever they're listening to, particularly my girls. And then, you know, for me, I have two sides. So one, I really like classical music, which is really calming. So if I need to really calm down, I listen to classical music. But the thing that I do most to look after myself is I go for runs. And then when I'm running, I always like really sort of bouncy kind of high beat music, because that gets me going.
So you've given me a fairly difficult dilemma here, haven't you?
Yes.
You've said classical on the one hand, and I would invite you to listen into Classical Beats here on Eastside Radio on Tuesday evenings, one of my other shows. And you also have expressed an interest for Taylor Swift.
Yes.
Okay, then. Well, Allegra Spender, thank you so much for spending some time with us here on Eastside Radio. Let's see what we can do with your musical choice.
Thank you. Thank you.
You have been listening to Eastside Radio Podcast. For selections of more enjoyable content like this, visit our website, eastsidefm.org, and click on Podcast.